A perilous romance, a tragic history, an infamous wager. Shakespeare's most controversial yet poignant play, The Merchant of Venice, offers a visceral display of courtship, prejudice, money, and revenge, ending ultimately in a choice between life and death. Shakespeare and Company's founding artistic director Tina Packer reunites with longtime company member Jonathan Epstein as Shylock, the Bard's most memorable and highly charged outsider. Tamara Hickey plays Portia in the production as well, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tina, Jonathan, and Tamara to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much, Derek, for being with us.
Thank you.
To Jonathan and Tamara, I welcome you. Thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
But I have to flirt with Tina for a moment. Okay. How are you, my dear?
I'm glad I'm still flirtable with Joe.
Oh, I love you. You know how much I love you. How's everything going?
It's going pretty good. I mean, heart-rending rehearsal period because it's a very complex, difficult, both very painful and very funny play. But we've been doing it against the backdrop of all the things that have been happening in America. So we're a multiracial, multinational, multicultural, multireligious troupe, and we've been doing it against all the things that have been happening in Dallas and Baton Rouge and all the other places. So it's been very, very difficult.
And not to mention, the last time we spoke, what was happening in your home country of Britain.
Brexit.
And as we speak, there is a new prime minister
coming aboard. That's right. It's going to be interesting. I just hope the racism in Britain stops, now. I mean, that it will settle down again.
So when you decide months ago, maybe even a year ago, to that you want to tackle this, I assume you know and figure that it will always be relevant and that it will always touch people in a way.
Yes, I do. But it's not like doing one of the big tragedies, which has a kind of resolution to it. This has no resolution. Yes, it's a comedy, so all the people who fall in love with each other end up married to each other, but they all end up with, if I might say so, dodgy marriages, or at least marriages that are going to have a lot of work done on them. And then, this Shylock, who it finishes ostensibly in Act 4 of the play, and so does that mean that we've done with, he's become a Christian and so all things are well? Well, no, I don't think so. And so Shylock kind of takes over the play. He's so powerful in Shakespeare's imagination that he just takes off. I think probably in a way Shakespeare didn't anticipate he was going to take off. But then when you come to, his forced conversion in the end, you feel as if you're watching all the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of forced conversions in Europe at this time. You're right. Watching the same thing and all the stuff that meant, So it's a painful play. And I said, yes, I'd do it again so long as, Johnny was playing Shylock again so we could continue that exploration.
So in continuing that exploration, and I'll hear from you first, but what are the conversations like between the two of you as to getting it right and to understand what it is you're trying to convey?
Well, it had more to do with confidence. In other words, confidence that we would be on the same page. Johnny actually has shifted his performance quite a bit, and I'll let him talk about that. But he's much more analytic, and by that I mean taking the argument out to the audience. And we're playing on in the round, Joe, on all four sides, and the audience is right there with us. I mean, the actors are acting amongst the audience, so all the questions about, why do you hate me, are actually being directed to the audience as much as anybody else, and then the responses are then being directed to the audience.
Is it a classic interpretation?
Well, we certainly wear Venetian gear, Elizabethan gear, so you could say it is. I think it's very Elizabethan in as much as we interact with the audience in a way modern audiences don't usually get interacted with, but the Elizabethans certainly did. And I think as far as a play with this kind of density, asking, you know, Alan would not be out of place in the middle of this production.
Well, he would never be out of place, would he?
Well, I don't know, but I mean the kind of deep questioning that goes on, and that you feel Shakespeare himself was doing. Don't forget, Rodriguez, the Elizabeth the First Doctor had just been executed for, they said, treason, and he was a Jew. He was a Christianized Jew, but that all the Jews were Christianized Jews. So that lived in England, and if England officially didn't have any Jews, but there were a lot of Jews there. Including possibly Shakespeare's girlfriend, you know. So, again, a Christianized Jew. But I feel that Shakespeare's asking the most fundamental questions he can about what is religion, but he's also asking what is love, because you've got a homosexual and the hero, if I put it, of the play, or the romantic hero, is both gay and straight. So now where do we go?
So, Jonathan, what are the... she has the confidence, so as far as in you, and so then the conversations and what you want to bring to this iconic role, what are those conversations?
Tina,
like?
You know, I think we... I know I do my best work with her in the room, and she does good work with me in the room, but our conversations are really in shorthand. She'll go, well, Johnny, could you... And I'll go, yeah, sure. And we don't actually ever get to the subject. Because I know what if she's talking about this moment, I know that she's asking me to go deeper in this particular way.
You've worked together for a long time.
Many times. This is more than 20 productions together. She's directed me more than I've directed her, but we've both directed each other. And we've
Which
acted
is a gift
together.
In and of itself.
No kidding. Yeah. The thing that has shifted is twofold. One is I feel less responsibility to be speaking about Jews as Jews, that I'm speaking about Jews as an example of the outsider, and the struggle of the Jew in America is less pressing now, let's say, than the struggle of the Arab American or the African American or the Asian American, you know, so that I'm speaking a little more generally, so hath not a Jew eyes. Yes, I'm asking about Jews, but I'm asking about anybody who's different than you. We're fed with the same food. We're hurt with the same weapons. We're subject to the same diseases, healed by the same means. So that's one shift that's happened in the 18 years since we worked on the play together. The other is that I've been doing a lot more teaching of late and have been looking at the kind of language people use, which is, in rhetorical terms, it's either emotional or it's logical or it's ethical. And 18 years ago, I was really interested in the strength of emotion. And I, in a sense, forced Shylock into an emotional place. But Shylock's language is actually extremely logical, and when it's not logical, it's ethical, and it's hardly ever emotional. So this time, with Tina's, you know, blessing and encouragement, I've been interested in following the logic. Following what should I say to you is an ethical question. It's not an emotional one. It's about should. And what's been happening is that the emotion is still there, but the logic and the invitation to the audience to wrestle with the ethical questions is much stronger, because they're not being overwhelmed by a huge emotional event. Oh, I have to feel sympathy. No, they're actually being invited. What am I supposed to do now? So that's quite a big shift for me to, in a sense, trust that people won't find it cold if I look myself for the things that have to do with logic and ethos rather than pathos.
Mm-hmm. The Merchant of Venice runs on the Tina Packer main stage at Shakespeare and Company in Lenox through August 21st. As I mentioned, Tamara Hickey plays Portia. What has this been like for you?
It's been an incredible journey. I didn't really come with much expectation other than I knew I was going to be working with both Tina and Johnny. I met Tina in the intensive in 2003, also met Johnny there, and those two in particular had a really strong impact on me in terms of my training and the kind of work that I wanted to really delve into. So I think personally it's been an absolute joy and pleasure artistically and creatively, because I feel in the environment that is Tina's room and that is Shakespeare and Company, and working across from Johnny, there's room for an exploration that I really appreciate, and it's this marriage of the personal and the professional that you so often either don't have time to find a union of, or you just the people are working from a different level of aesthetic. So, and out of the personal work that Tina sort of sets up, I feel like I discovered things about Portia that I could never have done on my own, pre-rehearsal, looking at the words on the page, and that is just such a gift as an actor, to be able to be taken along a path as opposed to feel like, okay, I got to figure out what this is and then implement it somehow. So it's been surprising on a lot of levels in terms of who the character is, what this play means, and it just continues to evolve.
Tell us a little bit about Portia and the character that you play.
I mean, I think the best, in terms of her path and her story, I brought this up once in rehearsal. I feel like, for me, the discovery was she's someone who is seeking and hungry for knowledge and finds power and doesn't really like it. So it's sort of changed by that journey, that power journey being represented in the court when she's, you know, dressed as a man and able to exercise a certain level of power and position that she wouldn't otherwise be able to.
Recently, I was doing the show. I was in this room and I was talking to a theater group, and there was a director present, and I spoke to the director and I asked what it was like in putting a production together, and it was a play that had a fairly serious message to it and a lot going on. And the director said to me, well, I love to just sit back, watch the actors, and let them figure it out. And I immediately thought of you, Tina, and I thought, I don't think Tina would do that.
Well, I do it on one level, but I also feel language, as you know, Joe, language is so powerful. The words that we speak have much longer lives than we do, and they develop our minds and our bodies.
Yes.
So we are the embodiment of the words that we speak. So I've found a way to and through the voice work, but also through the owning the individual words in the script, for the actors to connect so deeply to what they're saying, that then what they're going to do with it often is up to them and in their relationships with each other. But they're not even thinking about it at that point. They're reacting to each other and actually taking off. And the thing about Shakespeare is he's so got such depth of understanding about what it means to be human, but also on a political level, you know, so that on a social level, so that you can rely on him if you keep saying the words and connecting deeply and interacting with your fellow actors, something incredible is going to happen. And indeed it does. I think that Tam's Portia is not a Portia I've ever seen before. And this finding of her love of the power and then it knocking her sideways and exhausting her and making her very vulnerable when she sees what she's done in the courtroom and not liking herself for doing it and yet loving herself for being so triumphant and winning. It's a complexity I don't think that you can often get with other writers, and Shakespeare gives you that.
So let's explore that for a moment. In the idea that you have never seen a Portia like this.
Yes.
So does that come from of what you want to see as a director, or of what Tamara brings to the role that you are then allowed to explore that?
Both. Both. In other words, what happens is we do this process called dropping in right at the beginning, which is sitting eyeball to eyeball and going through every word in the script with your acting partner. And so what happens is the connection between those actors start building up. And because they're saying the words in that role, the relationship between the actors is building up, both between themselves and because of the words between the people that they're playing. Do I make that clear?
Absolutely.
And then they're owning it in the whole of their bodies, not in just intellectually, though it includes the intellect. They're owning it with the whole of their bodies. And what I'm doing is saying, yes, yes, go for it, go for it. You know, so I'm an energy behind them, really encouraging them to go for it so that we can see what we've got. And it can go to places that the intellect can never go, because you're now working with the whole of yourself, both your voice and your body. And you're going, I mean, there's a reason why the whole of our modern age came out of the Elizabethans, if I can put it, or Renaissance Europe. It was because they had so much going for them in the expansion of their minds, both on a religious and spiritual level, but also on a human interacting level that they had never had before. The Middle Ages didn't do it in the same kind of way. And really, if I could say so, that's how, you know, they set sail across the seas, and because they wanted to illuminate their lives in various kinds of ways by not living in a constrained life and being able to have, you know, a place where they could go and expand even further.
There is such an intensity that you have in discussing this and hearing the two of you speak. Such an intensity. Does it almost take over even when you're not on stage, of having that, of being a part of you that you can't shake easily, especially since this isn't just a 2-week run, you're doing it over a course of 3 months.
It's hard to sleep. It's hard to sleep.
I find that fascinating. Do you know why it's hard to sleep?
Yeah, you're really, well, in a role like that, it's really interesting. Tina talked about the big tragedies, which I've done a few.
Yeah.
And the thing about the tragedies is that you come back to humanity. That Lear's most human moment, his sanest moment, is his last. Brutus's sanest and happiest moment is his last. In this play, as Tina mentioned, even with the little odd sort of coda we do at the very end of the play, where I don't actually come back on stage, but my voice is heard on stage, Shylock doesn't come to any kind of conclusion. And so that my soul, whatever you want to call it, doesn't go through that moment of the river running out to the sea. It's still in the middle of the rapids. So that gentle, you know, the poem Crossing the Bar, such a tide as moving seems asleep. Well, that doesn't happen with Shylock. It happens perfectly with Lear. You just drift off. So there's a lot left going on. And if you've been doing this long enough, you learn how not to be harmful, because you're still carrying, you know, so you don't come home and, you know, throw dishes at the dog. You come home and
please don't do that. But you still feel like you're in the turgid water.
A part. And so you sort of separate that part out from the part of you that's actually, you know, taking the dog for a walk and
keeping
and
the
so
dishes
on. It's probably quite different. There are other plays like this. Tempest is maybe one where Prospero's in such a different place than the rest of the company. Certainly, I would imagine that doing Aaron in Titus Andronicus would be very similar, although obviously I've never done that. But you need to be respectful of how resilient you aren't, and make sure that you don't go around yelling at people.
Tamara?
Yeah, I would say that I've often used this word before, and I can't find a better one, that there's a residue that remains.
That's a great word.
Where you, between rehearsal periods, and John, I laughed about the sleep, because we both, I felt I wasn't sleeping at all, and I was, you know, so much of my daily life just fell away, and there's an intensity that that comes into play. And I feel like when you go down this road that marries the personal, the deeply, the dropping in process that Tina's referring to is you're calling up the deeply personal side of yourself and marrying that with the character and the words and the play. And when you go there, it requires a certain level of courage and then responsibility. You want that to be on the surface, but then it doesn't go away. You just have to kind of keep breathing and know that there are relationships and a reality outside of this world that you're responsible for. And just sort of having that personal agreement with yourself and amongst your cast members.
To use Tamara's word, Tina, do you want the audience to have that residue as well?
I do. And if I can just give another example, which we haven't talked about, but came out through rehearsals. So we're a multiracial cast. And so Lancelot the Servant is being played by one African-American, and Lorenzo the Young Lover is being played by another. And they have a couple of exchanges, servant-master exchanges, which normally would go for nothing. But in our environment, and in this environment, the political situation that we're in right now, we suddenly started getting into levels of what it means to be a master, what it means to be a servant. And if you remember, Shylock also talks about the slaves. You have amongst you many a purchased slave. That we started going down this road, and they have illuminated this play about what it means to be a master and what it means to be a slave in ways I would never have thought it was possible, Joe. And that is through them owning the material and them going down the road of it and not holding back. And I'm enormously proud of them there. I mean, two terrific actors who are doing it.
Do you like talkbacks? Does that give you an opportunity to
I like them. Unfortunately, we have this thing called switchover. We have to change the set for them because we're in repertoire, and so we normally can't do them. We've got one scheduled, I think, and we encourage the people to come and talk to the actors afterwards if they can. If they want to say anything or to write in. So we're devising various ways in order to give feedback. I have to say the play is very, very funny as well. I mean, it sounds as if we're... But that's one of the things that makes it really a joyful experience and a very difficult experience, because how can you go from laughing and laughing into something which is horrendous? And it goes scene after scene, funny, tragic, funny, tragic, funny, tragic. And you're getting knocked all over the place. Mm. And then some of the most sublime poetry in the canon. I mean, just sublime. And I have to say that for me, art is the thing that allows us to expand and go beyond and have insights to some of the terrible things we do to each other. And that often is the way out, is through poetry, through music, through all those things. And I think Shakespeare thought that as well. So I see him working to get a bigger spiritual dimension in this play, almost self-consciously doing that. And therefore allowing himself to go into some of the darker places.
Well, The Merchant of Venice runs on the Tina Packer main stage at Shakespeare and Company in Lenox through August 21st. Jonathan Epstein plays Shylock, Tamara Hickey plays Portia, and Tina Packer directs the production. For more information, you can visit shakespeare.org, shakespeare.org. I thank all of you for being with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you here, as always, and thank you for the wonderful work you're doing.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Again, for more information, you can visit shakespeare.org, shakespeare.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.